This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. We are awaiting a press conference with Presidents Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, Finland. The two leaders met for a few hours today in a controversial meeting without a clear public agenda. The press conference is already about an hour and a half late, and it's being disrupted right now by a protester who was holding up a sign saying something about a nuclear weapons treaty. No doubt that will delay the press conference even further, but don't worry about it. We'll monitor it. If there are any major cuts, any sound bites that come out of the press conference, we'll bring them to you as quickly as we can. You'll also get more details here on this NPR member station and online at npr.org. Forbes magazine sparked a debate last week by including reality TV star Kylie Jenner in its list of America's richest self-made women. Now, Jenner might not be your idea of self-made, but she has made a splash with her brand of lipsticks and lip liners, and she's not the only one. Six women on the Forbes list made their money in the beauty industry. No wonder the business is worth an estimated $445 billion, billion with a B, little of which has catered to people of diverse backgrounds. But that is changing. Joining us from WHYY in Philadelphia to discuss the diversifying cosmetic industry is Tiffany Gill, an associate professor of history and Africana studies at the University of Delaware. We'll get to her in just a moment, but also joining us from NPR in New York is Jordan Holman, a reporter for Bloomberg. Jordan, welcome to 1A.
Thank you.
So that number about how much the beauty industry is worth, is that about right? Just under a half trillion dollars?
Yes, that's the global number. In the U.S., which is the largest market for cosmetic brands and the beauty industry, it's around $18 billion. And a lot of that is made up of makeup sales and revenue from makeup.
Give us a sense of what some of the big trends are in the industry, particularly in light of a line that was just launched, by the pop star Rihanna. This is one of the stories that kind of caught our attention recently. Here's a brief clip of her talking about the brand.
We've had this amazing emotional connection with customers who've never been able to find their shade of foundation before. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, women crying at the counters, it's crazy to even think about, because when I first started creating the brand and making foundation, it wasn't that deep for me. The first woman I ever saw put makeup on her face is a black woman, that's my mom. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm thinking of my customer, that is one of my customers, and I wanted everybody to feel like they can come and be a part of the Fenty Beauty moment and the new generation, in my words.
Rihanna speaking about the brand Fenty Beauty. Some of you have also commented to us about this. Adrienne wrote on our Facebook page, "I think the significance of Rihanna's makeup line is having better choices for women of color." Another listener wrote on our website, the1a.org, "Fenty sold out its darker foundation shades almost immediately upon them appearing in stores. It was a huge story when the line was released back in the fall. It's kind of a big deal in the makeup industry." Jordan, why is Fenty Beauty such a big deal?
Definitely. I think that Rihanna clip really wrapped it up. It's very emotional to finally, after waiting so long, to get the shade that perfectly fits your skin tone. And that's what Fenty and other brands are now doing for darker skin women, brown skin women, black women. And that's just a huge deal, because black consumers have a huge buying power that wasn't being tapped into before Rihanna really brought it to the market. And now the huge trend is her pop-up shops. And those, you know, when she has one, those products sell out immediately. So people just have been wanting to have a brand that is catering specifically to them.
We are speaking to Jordan Holman, a reporter from Bloomberg. Also joining us now on the line from WHYY in Philadelphia is University of Delaware Associate Professor Tiffany Gill. She's the author of Beauty Shop Politics, African-American Women's Activism in the Beauty Industry. Tiffany, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
What's your take on this Rihanna story? Let me start with that before we back up a little bit historically. Fenty Beauty, what's your take on the impact this has kind of in a larger, more historical context?
Sure. When the Fenty launch came, I was really astonished by how, actually, I wasn't astonished by how popular it was, but just how surprising it was to the rest of the beauty industry. When it came and it launched with 40 different shades for different complexions, it wasn't the first beauty brand to do this. But what I think Fenty did, and Rihanna's clip that you played earlier illustrates this beautifully, is that Black women were made to feel at the center of this brand. Black women were not as an afterthought or something that wasn't central to the brand. And I think this really gets at questions around the meaning of beauty and the way that beauty has often been aligned within Western culture with whiteness. And so for Rihanna to say that the first woman she saw putting on makeup was her mother and that the Black woman consumer was at the center is really what made this quite a phenomenon.
Tiffany, give us a sense of people of color and makeup just in the last few decades or so. I know there's a very long story, and we'll get into some more of that in a little bit. But where does Fenty Beauty sit historically over the last few decades in terms of independent efforts to create more lines that cater to people of color?
Right. What's interesting is that when we look at the long history of African Americans in beauty, we really see a turning point happening in the 1970s. And in the 1970s, Eunice Johnson created Fashion Fair Cosmetics. And of course, Johnson was part of the Johnson Publishing Company, which published Ebony magazine. And she had been doing fashion shows around the world featuring Black models and was unable to find makeup that the models could use. And so she approached a couple of mainstream beauty companies, and they refused to work with her, and so she charted her own path. But once Fashion Fair became popular and they began to see there was a market for it, we begin to see companies like Revlon in the 1970s and 1980s really coming into the beauty space. However, Black women never had the luxury of having the full range of complexion options when it came to makeup. And often when these options did exist, many times stores would not carry them. Department stores and even drugstores would not carry a full line. So Black women always had to become very creative, mixing their own products. Even models and others in the entertainment industry found it difficult to find shades that worked for them.
Yeah, I remember the Ebony Fashion Fair events when I was young. Like my family, I remember we went to one. It was a gigantic event. Sandra asked via email, "It's sad to see that the premier African-American cosmetics company, Fashion Fair, is struggling to stay in business. Fashion Fair was originally the only cosmetics company that offered products for women of color." Jordan Holman, can you talk about some of the business challenges that companies like this have faced in the past to try to create independent lines for more diverse audiences?
I think scale is a huge issue when it comes to minority-owned businesses trying to grow and bring their products to diverse communities. You know, makeup is facing a lot of the things that retail is facing. You are used to going into the department store and going to the beauty shops and the makeup counters. And with less people going into department stores, that's less foot traffic for these shops as well. And so a lot of it is going towards social media and people wanting and learning about brands on social. And that takes money, that takes influence. So that's another reason why Fenty was so huge. It's like they had a huge influencer of Rihanna and everyone loves her and that they know to get their products from her. So when you look at other businesses who are trying to stay in their space, a lot of it is making sure that they have the right resources to be able to scale. There's a stat that 3% of VC funding goes to Black women.
That's VC it. Funding, venture capital funding.
Venture capital funding, people who give you money to make your business grow and expand, goes to Black women, only 3%. And so that's, you know, that's also an issue, and that makes it difficult to expand and, you know, compete with the L'Oreals and Macs of the world.
Glad to hear some of your stories about dealing with issues of diversity in makeup. Shreyas emailed, "I did not start wearing makeup until I was in my mid-20s and still don't most days. For the longest time, I blamed my inexperience for how terrible it looked. I never seemed to find the right shades for my Indian skin. But now, thanks to an increase in skin tone ranges and YouTube influencers, I'm able to do a decent job. There's a video for everything from using the right shade of concealer to tips for mature skin. It's been a game changer." We'll talk a little bit more about the social media aspect in a moment. But Jordan, I wonder how you see the impact of globalization on the makeup industry. Shreya said that she is Indian. India is an emerging market. How much of a role did that play in changing the colors that are available?
Yes, I think India becoming an emerging market that companies are really looking towards tapping into that growing middle class. There is a huge focus on personal, you know, care and makeup. And so companies realize that if you make products for people who are wanting to buy them, that is a good business practice. So India, China is a large market that cosmetics is growing in. And so all of those are helping here in the U.S., have companies open up and realize, hey, I should be making products for Americans here.
I know, Jordan, we have to let you go in a moment, and we'll continue with Tiffany Gill in just a second. But are we seeing, Jordan, are we seeing more women of color getting into the makeup business? Are some of the barriers of scaling beginning to be breached?
There are some funds that have just started opening up that are specifically trying to fund women who are business makers or business women in this, you know, beauty space. So, for example, Rich Lou Dennis, who is the CEO of Sundial brand that makes Shea Moisture and just bought Essence earlier this year, he started a $100 million fund for the specific reason of helping women who are in the beauty space grow their companies. So that's one way to start. But once again, that 3% stat is so dire and it needs to go up a lot.
Jordan Holman, a reporter for Bloomberg News. Jordan, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll continue the conversation with Tiffany Gill of the University of Delaware. We'll add a few more voices to the discussion. And next, we'll check out how social media has changed the way that people buy makeup products. We welcome your questions and thoughts, regardless of your race or color or ethnic background. We'd love to hear from you. 1A at WAMU.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Donald emailed, "Your attention to the quote-unquote subject of cosmetics is an embarrassment. Prioritizing a discussion about cosmetics is like asking Vladimir Putin what brand of toilet paper he uses. It cheapens your brand, wastes time, and highlights the worst of trivia." Donald, you underestimate us. We're monitoring the news conference with Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump right now. We're about to turn around a soundbite, but if you want to watch it live, you can do so and get all the latest developments on this online at npr.org. In the meantime, we're talking about diversity in makeup with Tiffany Gill, an associate professor at the University of Delaware. Tiffany, before we bring in a few more voices to this conversation, what is your sense for why non-white consumers have been ignored for so long in the cosmetics industry? Is it partly about scale, you know, pure business reasons? Is it partly legacy issues of race? What do you think is the big factor?
I think it's a combination of things. And I think where we need to start is with a discussion of how beauty has often been equated with whiteness when we're looking at American culture and really Western culture. So even as more markets are opening up with women of color in the U.S. and around the world, it's still this grappling with disrupting whiteness as what the ideal of beauty is, so that beauty brands often do not want to be associated with women of color because it disrupts their ideas of whiteness. One of the parallels that I like to make is with fashion, right? That we have the majority of women in America are over a size 14 in fashion. However, the fashion industry has been slow to catch up to meet that demand, not because the consumer market isn't there, but because fashion has often been equated with thinness. And so I think this conversation has to really start there, the way that being beautiful had been equated with being white. And as Black women and other women of color enter into this space, they're not just dealing with the issues of economics, but issues around the ideologies of race and beauty that have plagued us for centuries.
Before we continue this conversation, we should get to part of the news conference between President Trump and President Putin. Here is a clip of Vladimir Putin speaking through an interpreter just moments ago.
Negotiations with the President of the United States, Donald Trump, took place in a frank and businesslike atmosphere. I think we can call it a success and a very fruitful round of negotiations. We carefully analyzed the current status, the present and the future of the Russia-United States relationship, key issues of the global agenda. It's quite clear to everyone that the bilateral relationship are going through a complicated stage, and yet those impediments, the current tension, the tense atmosphere, essentially have no solid reason behind it. The Cold War is a thing of past. The era of acute ideological confrontation of the two countries is a thing of a remote past, is a vestige of the past. The situation in the world changed dramatically. Today, both Russia and the United States face a whole new set of challenges.
Part of the comments that Russia's President Vladimir Putin made to start the news conference. He spoke first in the news conference. President Trump spoke thereafter. President Putin also said the Russian state has never interfered in another country's internal affairs and is not going to interfere. More on that, including a live stream of the video of this conference, are online at npr.org. Now let's add a few more voices to this conversation. Joining us from San Diego is Ofune Amaka, the founder of Coco Swatches. That's an app that swatches makeup on underrepresented skin tones. Ofune, welcome to 1A.
Thank you.
Joining us from NPR in New York is Arshia Morjani, a YouTuber and beauty blogger. Arshia, welcome.
Thank you.
I should note that a lot of listeners, in fairness, have questioned why we're having this conversation all together, but not because of the news out of Helsinki, Finland. Listen to some of what the listeners left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Bria.
Bill from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Hello, my name is Barbara from Naples, Florida. As a woke woman in my 70s, I'm looking forward to the day when women realize we have to stop this wasteful and spirit-breaking habit of putting on makeup.
I have a 9-year-old daughter, and the makeup question has been coming up recently. And she says, because I want to look prettier.
And what I wish is that we didn't concentrate so much on covering our beauty up with products as opposed to letting our beauty shine through naturally.
I know you're asking about shades of makeup and stuff, but I think it's something to consider that the tradition of wearing makeup for women can contribute to a low self-esteem in kids and possibly adults, too.
Thank you all very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Arshia Morjani, let me start with you. What would you say to these folks who kind of question the conversation about makeup in general?
Makeup is looked at, you know, as a superficial thing, and a part of me understands that, but for me, makeup is something that makes me feel most confident, you know? Even if it's a little bit of a light makeup or a full face of makeup, I feel my absolute best when I do have a little bit of makeup on to cover any imperfections. So I don't think there's anything really wrong with wearing makeup.
Ofune, what about you?
I think I would say you know, as we kind of progress in society, makeup in the past has traditionally been this thing that people have felt pressured to wear. But nowadays, makeup is really about being creative. I look at it also kind of like fashion, as to where, you know, picking out, you know, the right pair of pants is the same thing as picking out the right shade of red lipstick. It's something that I use to express my creativity. And so I feel like we're getting to a place where makeup is less and less about, I guess, you know, feeling insecure, and more about kind of, you know, like she just said, feeling confident. You know, wearing a red lipstick to a meeting makes you feel like, or makes me feel like, a boss. So I feel like it's more about expressing creativity rather than being insecure these days.
One of our listeners tweeted, a sad fact is that women who do not wear makeup get less raises and fewer promotions. Women of color are already disproportionately affected by inequity. This may seem like a trivial topic. It's not. I don't wear makeup, but I am glad this discussion is happening. Marianne tweeted, just imagine the economic impact if every woman decided to embrace their natural look and dump makeup. It took me to age 70 to free myself, although I do use mascara for my invisible eyelashes. before we move on from the merits of this, Tiffany, I wonder if there's just some inherent sexism built into this. I mean, I'm a guy who spends probably way too much time and energy worried about my physique and trying to turn myself into the action figure that I see in my head. But the conversation about women and makeup, for some reason, that's completely unacceptable. Is there a little sexism at play here?
I think there definitely is. There's a way that women are called to carry particular kinds of burdens, and that the choices that women make about how to present ourselves to the world seem to carry a higher weight than it does for men. And I think this can work on both sides, that while, yes, I agree that beauty has been used in ways to oppress women and to keep women constrained. But also, I think this new conversation, well, not really new, relatively new conversation around the way that those who do participate in beauty culture are also participating in acts of oppression is also equally problematic. And I think for women of color, this becomes even more of an issue. The way that women of color wear, not just wear makeup, but how we wear our hair and wear clothing becomes such a marker of so many other political things.
Yeah.
And so I think that the issue of creativity and play is really important, and that women should feel free to either embrace makeup or to turn it down, but that they shouldn't have to carry this extra burden.
We're speaking to Arshia Morjani, a YouTuber and beauty blogger, Ofune Amaka, the founder of Coco Swatches, and Tiffany Gill, Associate Professor of History and Africana Studies at the University of Delaware. Quite a few of you can directly relate to this conversation, particularly people who have really been challenged to find something that you feel looks quite right with your skin tone. Alicia emailed, "I would like to say, as a white woman who's been wearing foundation for 25 years, it's hard to find a shade that matches my white skin. Either I have to be white as a ghost or an orange tint. I just think that makeup is getting better because of technology." Rebecca wrote on our Facebook page, "I'm white, black, and native. My skin tone is a pink olive. I've never found a foundation that came close to matching my skin, so I just don't wear foundation." Ofune, I wonder if that's a good segue to talking about Coco Swatches. These sound like exactly the kinds of people who you're trying to help in terms of showing what different shades of makeup will look like on different colors of skin. If I'm understanding what Coco Swatches is, you basically show this is what this makeup would look like on all these different skin colors so people can kind of see it before they buy it.
Yes. So Coco Swatches, like you said, basically is a concept of a swatch. Is so basically showing the color cosmetics against a skin tone. And I started off actually on the other end of the spectrum with darker skin tones, because I myself have a darker skin tone. And I feel like although some of the lighter skin tones, people with lighter skin tones have similar issues, people with darker skin tones really have little to no options. Even today, I mean, even though there are so many brands that are coming out and expanding their shade ranges with, you know, 40 plus shades, a lot of times undertones are not right. They're still kind of gray. They're still kind of ashy. And so this kind of shade conversation and undertone conversation is one that needs to continue, because it's not just about the shade range, it's about how many shades are actually wearable.
Hey, Ofune, since you mentioned undertone, I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit more, particularly because one of our listeners asked about that specifically. Here's part of what she left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Elaine, and I just wanted to say that finding makeup for my complexion is definitely easier today than several years ago. As an African-American woman who is fairly medium skin, makeup now have more colors that are amenable to black skin tone. Particularly with my yellow undertone for my skin, I find it to be extremely much, much easier. Some time ago, makeup used to have red and pinkish undertones, which absolutely did not work and led to a chalky type of complexion, but thanks to the improvements in today's makeups, things are much better. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. Ofune, explain what we mean by undertones and why that matters for those of us who aren't so red in on makeup.
Yeah, so undertones, easy way, I guess, to tell your undertone is One, if you can see the color of your veins, or two, if you look better in silver or gold. So there's three kind of general, I guess, undertones: neutral, warm, and cool. And so, like she was saying, she has more of a golden undertone, which would kind of be considered more warm. And in the past, a lot of times when brands used to create shades for darker complexions for Black women, they would always make our foundation either really super red, or they would come off really too neutral, too gray. And so the fact is that you can't just make dark foundation the way you make light foundation. The mixes of, you know, the primary colors have to be formulated differently to get those undertones right for the darker color. So, like, for me, I'm golden and I have a darker skin tone, and a lot of times it's hard for me to find foundation because a lot of the darker foundations on, you know, the end of the spectrum tend to be more cool tone and more red.
Arshia Morjani, let me come to you in terms of just finding these shades. We heard from a number of listeners who struggle because they're in between shades. Here's another comment that came to our inbox.
Hi, my name is Ash, and I'm ringing from Michigan with regards to the makeup questions you had. I am Indian. I'm not that fair, and I'm not that dark, and I always find it difficult to find eye concealers and foundation that's not going to make me look a different color. Normally, there are the two white if I go to a normal makeup place, and if I go to Bobbi Brown's or MAC, they're usually a little too dark because those are mainly made for Black people. So I find it very, very difficult to find foundation and concealer. So maybe some Indian person out there would like to do something. Okay, thank you.
Ash, thanks very much for calling in. Arshia, what are you seeing in terms of companies dealing with people who are in between shades, or even the way we define what these shades are?
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with everyone else. I can usually find my shade if I really do look around, but the problem usually is with the undertones. Either it's too pink or too neutral where I start to look gray, and it's just a very unflattering look on my skin tone. So there are just a handful of brands that do justice to the golden yellow warm undertones in the right in the medium shade range. And you know, I have noticed now, especially brands are continuing to add more of the golden undertone, which is such a big demographic, not just with Indian women, but, you know, women and men from truly all over the world that are right in between. So they are perfecting or trying to perfect the medium skin tone with the right warm undertones as well.
Worth noting, Arshia, that not all of our calls were just about skin tone. Some of our listeners have been talking about what they are looking for in the makeup itself. Here's another message that came to our inbox.
Hey there, it's Beth in Salt Lake City, just responding to the invitation to weigh in on makeup. I just heard your prompt. I think that there is plenty of makeup in the world in terms of the typical department store brands and grocery store brands and drugstore brands. What I think there is less of, and it's harder to find, and I think more people are looking for it, is makeup with a conscience. It's stuff that's not tested on animals, stuff that's vegan. So that's my two cents. I just think that we should be more responsible with our products and think consumers are getting smarter these days. So hope that's usable. Take care.
It is indeed, Beth. Thank you for sharing that with us. Arshia, I know our time with you is limited, but what about that, the cruelty-free brands as it relates to the diversity of the industry today?
Yeah, I completely agree with Beth. You know, brands are becoming super, super conscious, and I think it goes back to the power of social media, the consumer really, really looking at the ingredients and learning more about the history of the brand, learning, you know, about the ethics of the brand. They can find the same red lipstick in, you know, with 100 different brands, but they want to support brands that truly have a story that is a conscious brand with good ethics backed by the power of social media.
Ofune, before we have to let you both go, I wonder what you see in terms of companies being more conscious of the diversity of skin tones. Do you find that there is more power in consumers to reward companies who meet this standard and to punish companies who don't?
Definitely. I think, this conversation around ethics and companies having a conscience is an interesting one, because I would actually disagree with the statement that there is a lot of makeup in the world for darker complexions. We're just now seeing companies starting to even beyond complexion products, you know, color cosmetics like red lipsticks or blue eyeshadows that actually show up on, you know, darker skin tones. We're still getting to that point. And so for the consumer that does have a darker skin tone, the ethics question is like, sometimes you have to choose, am I going to buy the product that's cruelty free
right.
or the product that actually shows up on my, you know,
right,
my face.
Right.
And so we're still on the journey to getting to that place where we are able to find that perfect brand that has, you know, that is vegan, mm-hmm. but also caters to, you know, more than 10 different skin tones.
Ofuni Amaka, the founder of Coco Swatches, and beauty blogger Arshia Morjani, thank you both for talking to us. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Stay close. We're continuing to monitor the news conference in Helsinki, Finland, between President Donald Trump and President Vladimir Putin. It is underway as we speak. A closed-door summit between them took place today. Both leaders debriefed reporters about their conversation after the meeting. They talked about Syria. They talked about Russia's interference in the election. They spoke about the future of the relationship between the two nations. President Trump spoke just a moment ago. Here is an excerpt of some of his early remarks.
I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago, a long time, frankly, before I got to office. And I think we're all to blame. I think that the United States now has stepped forward along with Russia, and we're getting together, and we have a chance to do some great things, whether it's nuclear proliferation in terms of stopping, we have to do it. Ultimately, that's probably the most important thing that we can be working on. But I do feel that we have both made some mistakes. I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. People are being brought out to the fore. So far that I know, virtually none of it related to the campaign. And they're going to have to try really hard to find somebody that did relate to the campaign. That was a clean campaign. I beat Hillary Clinton easily. And frankly, we beat her. And I'm not even saying from the standpoint, we won that race. And it's a shame that there can even be a little bit of a cloud over it. People know that, people understand it, but the main thing, and we discussed this also, is zero collusion. And it has had a negative impact upon the relationship of the two largest nuclear powers in the world. We have 90% of nuclear power between the two countries. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what's going on with the probe.
Some of the wide-ranging opening remarks from President Trump in a news conference with him and Russia's President Vladimir Putin. We're following this story. You can hear on your NPR member station and online at npr.org. We'd also love some help with tomorrow's conversation. We'll be speaking about editorial cartooning. These days, cartoonists are increasingly rare in America's newspapers. Some are finding new life on social media. Others are finding themselves downsized or fired for controversial content. If an editorial cartoon has ever moved you or affected you, what was the cartoon depicting? And how did you react to it? We'd love it if you'd share a link to that cartoon on our Facebook page or tweet it to us at 1A. If you are a cartoonist, we'd love to see some of your latest work. What are you commenting on these days? Share a link on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. We will speak about some of your favorites very soon. Back now to our conversation with University of Delaware Associate Professor Tiffany Gill. Tiffany, there's one more voice we want to add, but first, I'd love you to react to this comment from Arlene, who wrote on our website, the1a.org. It's about the money. These companies are in the business to make a profit, and in previous decades, perhaps there weren't many women of color who had a lot of money to buy makeup. If there were, the makeup they want would be there. Tiffany?
It's really not that simple. Black women consumers actually outspend white women consumers on all sorts of beauty products, whether we're looking at hair products, but also makeup. So even if we're looking at incomes, African-American women in particular have outspent. And so it's not just a matter of the money that's being spent. It really is about Black women feeling that they have a place within this market. And I think that's really the magic that Rihanna's Fenty line tapped into. It was not the first line to offer a wide range of complexions. Other companies had been doing it as well. But often, whether it was in the drugstore or in the department store, Sephora, they would have these tones in the darker shades, but they would not offer them on the shelves. You would have to order it online. You would have to search around neighborhoods and different drugstores to try to find it. What Fenty did was say, not only are we interested in your money, but we're interested in bringing women of color and other marginalized women to the table and having them represent beauty in new ways.
I should also note, lest we think that the Fenty line is just for Black and brown women, Julia emailed, "I am a 63-year-old freckle-faced white woman, and Fenty Glow is my go-to lip color. Thanks, Rihanna." Let's add one more voice to our conversation. Crystal Robertson has had her own challenges when it comes to finding makeup. She's joining us now on the line to discuss them. Crystal, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about your skin and what makes buying makeup so difficult.
My name is Crystal. I am albino, and also I live in a small town. So the only places I would really have to go would be Walmart, Rite Aid, Walgreens in that area.
Talk about some of what you struggled with in terms of what you find when you go to Walmart and Walgreens and so forth.
By me being albino, that means I don't have any skin pigment, so I would be searching for the lightest shade in those stores. And although their lightest shade would be like ivory or creamy beige, it would have a hint of yellow or pink. Now, speaking on undertones, I'm a cool undertone, so those shades showing up on me would either be pink or orange.
You went viral after the launch of Rihanna's Fenty Beauty line. You found a makeup that worked with your skin. Talk to us about that moment when you first put it on and you looked at yourself and you realized it worked. What was that like?
The magic part about that was I be on Facebook a lot. I'm in a beauty group called Beauty Book. And a lot of people were like, "Hey, Rihanna just released this makeup. Has anyone tried it? Has anyone tried it?" And I'm like, the mailman, he knocked on my door and he gave me my package. So I'm like, well, everyone's asking about it. It's sitting there right in front of my face. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put it on. I put it on, and the first thing I did was I woke my boyfriend up. I didn't let him know that I was putting it on or anything. I was just like, "Bae," I was like, "how I look?" And he was just looking, and I was like, "Well, you know, my package just came, you know, the foundation, how I look." He said, "Hey, you don't have that orange ring around your face." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? What do you mean?" So he was like, "That's Rihanna." I was like, "Yeah, like, this is the foundation that I didn't want to buy, because I was like, it's going to be a disappointment." But then I was like, well, you know, Rihanna, you know, she's a person that a lot of people look up to, and I trusted her.
So wait, this orange ring around your face, what was that that he was referring to?
When I put on makeup and it's not my correct color, you can see where the makeup begins in my skin.
Oh, so kind of the contrast that it creates makes the unmade up area look more orange?
No, it's like, yeah, a little bit like that. That's when undertone came into play. Like, with me being a cool undertone, that means it's not going to be any orange pigment or any pink pigment in that foundation. So that's why I needed to steer more towards the cool undertones. If you're a pink, or if you're like yellow, then you would need that pink or that yellow in those foundations to help everything blend out.
Right. I'd love for Tiffany Gill from the University of Delaware to jump in. Tiffany, what is standing out to you about Crystal's story?
For me, it's really the excitement that she has, right? The way that beauty has the ability to help someone transform, right? Someone feel more comfortable in their skin. The way that I talk about in my book, Beauty Shop Politics, the way that the act of adorning oneself or having someone adorn you really can help restore dignity in some areas. And so it gets to this question that I think you raised earlier about, you know, why are we talking about this, right? There's so many more important things happening in the world. But I do think that this power of beauty and transformation of someone who has felt marginalized within a particular beauty culture that they have wanted to participate in to now feel like they have options, right? And I think that's really what it's about. There's going to be no makeup line that is going to cater to the needs of every woman and every shade and every undertone that's available. But what women are asking for are more options, and particularly women who have been marginalized, just looking for places where they can play, where they can buy makeup, where they can have this sense of transformation if it's something that they choose to do.
Kristen wrote on our Facebook page, why all the hate? The makeup industry has been profoundly homogeneous for decades. The fact that a company has finally decided that there are more than a few skin tones is big. You can be a feminist and like makeup. They are not mutually exclusive. Jessica wrote on our Facebook page, what I have always found interesting is the amount of time, money, and effort young girls and grown women spend on makeup. I understand they want to look good, but there are girls and women who look like different people, with or without makeup. Why do we raise our girls to believe what they look like naturally is not acceptable? Crystal, I'd love you to respond to Jessica, particularly in light of however you viewed your own face, your own body growing up, and in terms of whether you felt acceptable or beautiful.
Well, in high school, a lot of people would come up to me and say, hey, I didn't know you had eyebrows, because, like, you know, me being albino, I don't have pigment in my skin or my hair. So I have that blonde light hair and also blonde eyelashes as well. So, you know, it's weird when people come up to you and you're like, hey, where are your eyebrows at? So I would try to draw my eyebrows on just to avoid those unnecessary questions and just to make me feel good about myself as well.
You do know that you are, I'm looking at a picture of you. You do know that you are adorable. You know that you're beautiful, right? There's nothing wrong with the way you look. You know that, right?
Thank you.
Okay. Because I mean, I do understand. I'm looking at your eyebrows and your eyelashes. They are very, very light. They're almost like an ultra blonde. They're super light. And I can get how maybe for someone who sees you for the first time, it might be surprising because they're not used to encountering someone with albinism. Yes. Was there anything that helped you kind of turn the corner in the way that you view yourself?
I'm actually big on like performing and singing and stuff. So in high school, I joined the drama club and I just forced myself to get up on that stage and sing my heart out. And I just had to look at myself and be like, look, I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life. I tried spray tans. I tried all of that stuff. It's a waste of money. And it was just time consuming. So what Rihanna did, what the Fenty Beauty did, was help me be like, let me get a shade that I can use and I can leave. I don't have to spray tan my whole body just so my foundation can match my face.
And when you look for your shade, just for those of us who aren't real savvy with makeup, are you looking for a color that makes you look less albino, that makes you look more uniformly dark? Or are you looking for a color that evens out your existing skin color?
I'm looking for a color that evens out my skin tone, but also that can kind of cover up the imperfections. Like, you know, you kind of get like a pimple here or discoloration over here. Mm-hmm. And just trying to create a smooth canvas.
Tiffany, let me come back to you for a second. L'Oreal put out an ad about their expanded shades. Here's a piece of that ad.
Growing up, I struggled to find makeup that matched my skin. At L'Oreal, our mission was to create true match with shades that reflect each person's skin tone, because everyone deserves a true match. We took over 1,000 skin scans from a mix of 57 ethnicities and came up with a blend of more than 5 pure color pigments. Blues for deeper shades, yellows for warm undertones, a hydrating, blendable foundation, and 45 shades that truly match your skin. True Match by L'Oreal Paris.
part of an ad from L'Oreal. Tiffany, as we're winding down our conversation, where do you see the industry right now? Are there companies like L'Oreal that are out in front? Is L'Oreal kind of late to the game? Is the industry, the mainstream industry, still kind of trying to catch up? Where do you see things?
Well, I think that what Fenty did was that it opened up the industry to pay attention to things that they had ignored. Now, L'Oreal actually had been a company that did a pretty decent job of covering complexions and skin tones. However, what we did not see in L'Oreal ads before the Fenty launch was the kind of conversation that was in that ad, where it's allowing women to talk about their troubles and finding makeup that worked for them. And I think it's really this question about women feeling beautiful and having options to feel beautiful in their own skin without having to transform their face. And I think what's happening in the industry now is that I'm hoping what this will turn to is that more women of color will have a seat at the table of these makeup brands and beauty companies, that more women of color would be encouraged to launch their own makeup brands, that the venture capital that we talked about earlier would be available. Now that there is an indisputable market, Fenty was the largest launch that Sephora has ever had. Now that there is no dispute that women of color and women who have been kept out of mainstream beauty want products, both on the prestige level and then also on the mass market level. My hope is that this will then open up opportunities for more people of color to be at the table of marketing, of decision making, of these major companies, and even launch some of their own.
And Crystal, before we go, I wonder what you would say based on your experience to some of these companies, particularly for folks like you who live in parts of the country where, you know, it's not a 15-minute drive to the nearest Sephora, let's say. What would you say to these companies in terms of dealing with folks who are more in your situation before we go?
Since I've been seeing the new ads, and I actually now I try to go in Walmart and Walgreens just to see there may be a possibility that I may find something there. So I'm very grateful that they are trying.
Are they trying hard enough? Should they be trying harder?
They should try. Well, one brand, Wet n Wild, they do actually have an albino model now. So they're trying to break into it. And you got to give them credit. I just want to see how far that they'll take it.
Crystal Robertson, we really appreciate you sharing your story. Thanks very, very much for talking to us.
Yes, sir.
And Tiffany Gill, an associate professor of history and Africana studies at the University of Delaware. Her book is called Beauty Shop Politics, African American Women's Activism in the Beauty Industry. Tiffany, we're glad to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We are continuing to monitor the news conference with President Trump and Vladimir Putin and the diplomatic changes that will transpire thereafter. The news conference just ended, so you can expect full coverage here on your NPR member station and online at npr.org. Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or any app you like. We'd love it if you'd write us a review. You'll find all the links to listen at npr.org/1A. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A. What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know? My lip gloss is cool. My lip gloss be popping. I'm standing at my locker and all the boys keep stopping. What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know about me?